This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To London, to Joseph Sternberg, who writes political economics for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He's a member of the editorial board. We're looking very carefully at something that is determinative of economics globally. That is an ambition for net zero, not only in London, but across much of the European plain, and once upon a time in the United States for the Biden administration. In fact, Mr. Biden is doing what he can to support net zero on his way out the door by banning oil and gas leases offshore in most of the United States. Net zero, what does it mean? Why is it not blossoming, given the rhetoric that it's had these last years? Joe, a very good evening to you. What is net zero, and what does it mean for the people of the United Kingdom and Europe? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, net zero has come to mean the ambition to achieve economies whose net carbon dioxide emissions are zero on an annual basis. And so that would mean that any emissions that you produce through transport or whatever have to in some way be pulled out of the economy. And the most efficient way of doing that, the view is to not emit at all. So, you know, this is all for purposes of averting climate change by limiting carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere. So net zero has come to be a shorthand for a whole bunch of environmental policies, mainly geared toward reduction of fossil fuel usage and, reducing reduction of carbon emissions in general. So that's where you get the subsidies and mandates related to the transition away from internal combustion engine autos to electric vehicles. It's where you get the transition to renewable energy from natural gas or coal. It's also where you get somewhat more intrusive and a little bit out there provisions, such as suggestions that we need to reduce our meat consumption so that our food production will not emit as much carbon. And so I think that what has been going on over the past few years is that there was an enormous enthusiasm politically for these policies. And I think that that enthusiasm is starting to collapse because Europe is discovering, and Europe is much further down this road than the U.S. is the costs are prohibitive, ruinous, and the benefits in terms of environmental mitigation or any of the rest of it just don't seem to be there. So, one of my pet theories is that 2025 is going to be the year when you're really going to start seeing this transition out of net zero because politically it's just not going to be sustainable anymore.
The electric vehicle, let's concentrate on that for the beginning because people can see it on the road. I see more and more Teslas driving around here in rural Connecticut each Sunday as on my way to worship. Net zero and electric vehicles. There was a large sales push early and the marketing was successful until we ran into some details that really don't have anything to do with net zero. Have to do with the fact that the insurance for an electric vehicle, a Tesla, is twice what it is for any other fossil fuel vehicle in the same region. In addition, the electric vehicle that Tesla makes, like others, is very heavy. A battery is very heavy, and it wears down the tires very quickly, so you have to replace them. It also spreads particulates from the tires all over the road. And then there's really the matter of when you damage the car, you have to find somebody to fix it. It's not commonplace to roll into the local gasoline alley and have them hammer it out. All of that was not part of the original discussion. Am I being too practical, Joe, and I should be more utopian about net zero?
Well, I think that, cars are exactly the right place to start with this conversation because that is a microcosm of where net zero as a political and economic and even an environmental project has gone terribly awry. On the one hand, you have the fact that, although in theory, the transition to electric vehicles is supposed to be good for the climate because you limit carbon emissions, they can actually be very environmentally destructive because you have all of the rare earth minerals that have to go into them, you know, the components that are used to manufacture them. And there are enormous environmental costs associated with the mining and refining of those minerals. And then you have the particulate matter that is released by the tires, because as you pointed out, John, the cars are much heavier than internal combustion autos. And then you have the fact that really the you know, motive part of it is only as green as the electricity that you put into it. And so unless you have also transitioned your national electric grid to renewables, which most countries have not been able to do because there are technological problems and cost issues associated with that, really you're just shifting the carbon emissions from the tailpipe of the car to the smokestack of your coal-fired power plant. And yet we've invested enormous amounts of taxpayer money in subsidizing the purchase of these vehicles, in subsidizing the build out of a charging infrastructure for them, even though the market demand isn't necessarily there for that. And then precisely because consumers don't want these vehicles for various reasons, introducing mandates that then create all sorts of distortions in the auto industry that increasingly are forcing automakers to lay off the thousands of factory workers who were producing internal combustion cars. So you end up with this policy that is enormously destructive of the economy and not obviously helpful for the environment. And I think that then if you multiply that over so many other industries where governments are trying to pursue these policies in the name of a net zero carbon economy, I think voters are increasingly going to start wondering if this is worth it.
Voters, that tends to be human beings wandering around. And I learned from your column that the net zero is a job killer. 80% of emissions come from 7% of the workers across OECD. What happens to them, Joe? Where do they go?
Well, I think that the experience has been, and this is a key part of the political con job that came to be involved in selling net zero that is coming undone now. The promise was that we were going to transition our industrial economy so that, yes, you would be losing high polluting jobs, but those would be replaced almost on a one-for-one basis by new high-paying green jobs. And that is just turning out not to be true. I think that the conclusion has been that the job losses in high-emitting industries tend to be accelerated. You know, those industries are shedding jobs at about twice the rate that they had before these policies came in. So you are definitely accelerating a process of industrial transition. Many of those workers struggle to find employment in the green economy, and those who do are often doing it for less pay than they enjoyed before. And bear in mind that this is not affecting all workers equally. The people who are disproportionately likely to be working in some of those high-emitting traditional industries are older workers, male workers with less education. And, you know, they were in those jobs because they were very high-paying jobs that are very highly skilled work, but don't necessarily require advanced education. And, you know, no one has really thought adequately about how you retrain those workers or the fact that the green economy doesn't produce enough jobs. The manufacturer of electric vehicles requires fewer workers than the, you know, manufacturer of an equivalent number of internal combustion vehicles. So, you know, I think that there is a real economic problem, and there was a huge sleight of hand that was pulled off here. And I think that that's becoming part of the political emergency surrounding these policies.
This one I love, Joe. I didn't know anything about the French government suggesting you've got to live in colder temperatures. It took us 2,000 years from the Romans to get central heating. And the French are now being told, forget your central heating, turn it down. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think that they credit the French for their honesty because legally their government is required from time to time to produce a manual on exactly how they would achieve their net zero goals. And you know, one of the things that they're discovering is that they have already plucked all of the low-hanging fruit. And so now the costs and the lifestyle sacrifices and the lower quality of life have to find their way into individual households. And that takes the form of heating your home to a lower temperature when you're in the winter, cooling it to a higher temperature during the summer, having television or computer or smartphone screens of lower resolution because higher resolution screens consume more energy, eating less meat. And what's ridiculous about this in the French context is that France produces so much of its energy through nuclear power, and that is a non-emitting source of energy. So you wonder, what is the point of all of these sacrifices? Why are they not just building more nuclear power plants? And I think that part of the answer is that there does seem to be a profoundly anti-human element to this philosophy of net zero. There's a hostility to prosperity or to improving standards of living or the other fruits of capitalism. But the political problem is that people like those things. So you're going to have to explain to the voters that these sacrifices are worthwhile, and it's going to become harder and harder to do.
After I read your column last week, I didn't pay attention to the news. I was not ready for the news at the Biden administration, on its way out the door, has decided to ban hot water heater types using natural gas. That's right. The new non-condensing natural gas-fired water heaters prohibited for sale starting in 2029. Why? They don't want us to have hot water?
Before you get to that, but just point out they lost the election, and climate policy was part of the reason that Republicans, and particularly President-elect Trump, fared so well. Remember, Trump went on the warpath against electric vehicle mandates when he was on the campaign trail. So, this is also illustrative of the thing that I think voters are starting to notice. This climate agenda is also profoundly anti-democratic because the people, the activists, the media class, and the bureaucratic class that really truly believe in this stuff are very happy to push ahead with it, even when they have just had a stomping reminder that there is no democratic mandate for these policies. And yes, I mean, they have a certain deeply held conviction that this is the right thing to do for the planet. But voters are noticing that voters don't seem to get a say in a lot of this. And I think that triggers a lot of political resentment.
And then fossil fuels themselves. In other words, it's not enough to prohibit certain purchases and recommend certain subsidized purchases like the vehicles, but also removing the possibility of oil and gas exploration and extraction from most of the coastline of the United States by the outgoing Obama administration. So it's not just promoting net zero, it's war on fossil fuel. Does Europe follow that in the same fashion?
Europe does it more so. And this is illustrative of a deep economic point that's going on here. No one is saying that we're going to have a fossil fuel economy forever. And I think that you can imagine a scenario in the future where we have transitioned away from fossil fuels and into renewables, and we have solved the technological problems that go with it, and new industries have developed in the green economy. A certain amount of that is going to happen naturally. And clearly, there are some consumers out there who want electric vehicles. They will continue getting better. More people will demand them. The problem is this forced march in that direction, this attempt to hasten that economic transition before the industries or the innovation are in place to support it. And I think that is the pincher that is creating so much economic harm and so much social harm for the people who are negatively affected by these policies. And that is the thing that is creating the political trouble.
And a note in your column, you suggest this is not the death of net zero. So it's going to hang on in certain virtuous metropolitan centers? Is that what Europe anticipates?
Well, I think it's not inevitable that these policies are going to end, because I think that, you know, certainly in Europe, a lot of voters really do truly believe in action for climate and have bought into a lot of the prevailing political storylines about this. So there is going to have to be an element of political persuasion to persuade people that it is actually safe to step back from these policies and would be desirable to do that. But I think that, you know, there is more of an opportunity for politicians who do want to step back from the economic brink now than there was before, because people are understanding that whatever supposed environmental benefits might exist, and those are very questionable, the economic costs are very real. And so I think that now that this is visible to voters, it becomes possible to start talking in a more normal political sense about what those trade-offs actually are.
Joseph Sternberg, political economics for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He's in London. We're going to go to London, the NHS, and Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister's remarks.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.